Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This
is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreeder. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Matt Weed, who rejoins us. He's a pediatric ophthalmologist and inherited retinal disease specialist. We talk about many topics, including at-home genetic testing, the latest breakthroughs in gene therapy, and what's on the horizon. And then we end with a little bit of NBA talk. As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. Remember that a list of financial disclosures will be in the episode description. And you can claim CME credits by going to the AAO link on our website and in the episode description. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is privileged to be rejoined by longtime correspondent, and it's been too long correspondent, Dr. Matthew Weed of the Spokane Eye Clinic in Spokane, Washington. Matt, welcome back.
It's great to be back. It has been too long. We've been in touch off the air, but yeah, it's great to be back on the podcast. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem. We have a bunch of different things we're going to cover, catch up. As a reminder, Dr. Weed does pediatric ophthalmology, but also inherited retinal diseases, which is of interest to many of our listeners. So let's start just one of the top topics people were talking about at the ASRS meeting I was just at, the American Society of Retina Specialists, was genetic testing. And there's genetic testing that people can get when they go to a physician. There's genetic testing people can go if they go to any pharmacy. Matt, let's start. First of all, let's talk a little bit about at-home genetic testing. I mean, how accurate is it? How useful is it? What sort of information can people get from it?
Well, are you talking about like the 23andMe type stuff? Is that
pharmacy and pick a 23andMe. What does it mean?
Let's see. So different people will give you different answers, but I don't put a lot of stock in what companies like 23andMe are able to tell you. I get the idea of, oh, it can be, you know, fun and useful to look at your ancestry and figure out, you know, where your ancestry came from based on your DNA. But I don't have a lot of faith in their methodology. I've seen things where, you know, people will test their sample, which is obviously the same DNA, mind you, with a variety of these different outfits, or even with the same outfit on multiple occasions, and get pretty disparate results in terms of like, oh yeah, right, you're, you know, 23% sub-Saharan African, or you're 49% Eastern European, and you would think that there wouldn't be that big of variability in those results that they would give. And I seem to recall even reading one published comment from someone who used to work at one of these companies saying that the ethnicity report that they would issue was something akin to darts on a dartboard. And so I just don't see really any value in that. There's also some questions about the ethics of providing your DNA and your genomic data and what could come of that in the future, whether that could be used by insurance companies or law enforcement for a variety of different reasons. This is sort of neither here nor there, but I was listening to the Man in the Window podcast recently on a trip, and this is about a very terrible series of crimes that were committed in California in, I believe, the 70s and 80s, which turned out to be the work of a single individual who fortunately was brought to justice now just, I believe, last year, in no small part thanks to genetic testing that had been performed at home and then submitted by family members of his without any knowledge, of course, that their family member was a serial killer, which they were able to then use that data and send in DNA that they had gathered at the crime scenes years ago and realized based on that DNA, hey, there's some living people that are really close to this person that committed these crimes, and then they were able to track him down through that. So obviously that was a good outcome because we caught somebody that had committed terrible crimes, but it does make you wonder, you know, what can be done with this genetic data. And so for me, I just don't see a lot of upside in doing it. I think that it's sort of like a mood ring or a fortune-telling episode, maybe slightly more scientific than that, but not much, and with some potential ethical dilemmas that can come along with it. So when I see people talking about things like that, if they ever ask me my opinion, that's what I tell them.
Yeah, there's a what couple do you think about? I mean, there's a couple interesting things you referenced there. I mean, I don't remember if I asked this on air or if I asked it off air. That tells you how meta my life has gotten in terms of not remembering whether I was on a podcast or not.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Have you seen Gattaca?
No.
Okay, so this is like a late 90s movie that I think bombed in the theaters, but did really well afterward. I saw it. We had to watch it in undergrad. We had like an ethics of genetics class that I took, which was actually super interesting, which is about, this is 15 years ago. And it had Ethan Hawke in it. The idea is that it's a society where everything is kind of based on genetic testing, right? So any job, anything you do, you're tested for it. And technically, there's no allowance for genetic discrimination. You're allowed to decline. But if you decline, they basically just don't give you the job. And the plot is about this guy who can't go to space because his genetic testing says that he's going to have cardiac failure and his heart's not up to it. And he's just not enhanced enough. And it's like, it's very like at the time, probably was 20 years too early, especially because, you know, I guess it just wasn't the right moment in the late 90s to talk about this stuff. I think now is probably a much more powerful time with gene therapy coming to light. But this whole idea, right, like you referenced, it was a good outcome, you can say, that people are getting caught based on the genetic testing. But it does bring into question a lot of things about freedom, privacy. And then the real question is, obviously, it's very accurate. But even these tests can make mistakes. So what happens if you incriminate someone for something that wasn't necessarily them, but you're now assuming that the testing is 100% accurate?
And that's the thing. It's a
slippery slope. It
can never be 100%. It can never be 100%. So we're dealing with probabilities here. We can say that the probability is close to zero or very, very close to 100%. And there's a huge amount of shades of gray in between those two things, obviously. But yeah, it does make you wonder about that. On the whole insurance question, fortunately in 2008 there was an act passed called GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, and it prohibits insurance companies from denying coverage to people based on health insurance companies from denying coverage to people based on results of genetic testing and from employers from doing the same thing. But it doesn't prohibit things like life insurance companies or disability insurance companies from using that information. And so, yeah, I think there's some things to just be aware of. Genetic testing is something that requires both counseling beforehand so that, like any other test, a patient understands the risks and benefits of participating, and also good counseling afterwards to help make sense of the results.
You know, this is a complete aside, like you said, and we're just going to go all over the place. Wikipedia tells me, do you know Gattaca finished number 5 the weekend it came out? It only made $12 million. Its budget was $36 million, so total bomb. What movie was first in 97, the weekend that it came out? This is going to be tough to know, so I'll give you a hint. It was a slasher film, and it had Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I know you did last summer.
Yeah, number one.
Yeah.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, that is surprising, actually.
That
was good. But I've never seen Gattaca, but I know it kind of took on sort of a cult classic status once it left the theaters. But I've never seen it. Sounds like one to watch, though.
Yeah, no, I would definitely put it. It's a good rewatch. I saw it recently with somebody maybe a year or two ago, and it holds up. The music and everything, it really is good. It was better now than it was in class, I'll tell you. You know, the other thing I was going to reference, you talked about over the counter testing. There was a couple of good presentations at ASRS where people took the 23andMe database and kind of looked through it for certain genes. And there's definitely some associations, right? There are certain genes in certain populations may confer a higher risk of macular degeneration, for example. And that's the most common thing we see as retina specialists. I'll get a patient in their 50s who's completely healthy who freaks out because they do 23andMe. They get this printout and it says you may have a higher risk for macular degeneration. And it's almost like, it's almost like your HLA sequencing, like, you know, just because you have this gene doesn't mean you're going to get it. But if you have it, you're higher risk than someone who doesn't have it. So what do you do with that information? And these patients come in and they're like, well, I have no family history. I don't smoke. They have zero drusen. But what do I do to prevent myself from getting macular degeneration? You have to talk people down a little bit and be like, look, like, you know, this is not a sentence that you're going to get this. This is just a correlation, not a causation.
Yep, that is a great topic. The Academy has actually published a position statement on this very issue, genetic testing for risk factors for AMD. And the long and short of it is, until the results of said testing has specific implications for treatment, then they don't recommend it. And it's a great example of how sometimes genetic testing can have negative consequences that are not readily foreseen. For example, the person who did the 23andMe testing might not have ever, and likely did not, realize that they were going to get some data, you know, however you want to refer to that as, data regarding their risk status for AMD. But now that they've got it, it's like something that they can't unlearn, and you're going to have to talk to them and counsel them appropriately, but they're going to be worried about it, and they weren't worried about it before, and maybe they should be worried about it, and maybe they shouldn't, but the reality is we don't need to treat those patients really any different than we would anybody else. If they don't have any drusen, if they're not smoking, if they're eating a regular healthy diet, then my recommendation would be, I'd love to see you in a year, and if you notice any vision changes sooner, then come and see me. And it's hard because when they have these data, this result, then that's like a tangible thing, and it's saying that they're at higher risk, and it's tough, and that's why we got to be careful.
What else? So what else is new? So in terms of people can do at home, what about things that people can get done through a provider? I know you were talking about earlier the Spark has been offering some testing. So what's going on that front?
Well, Spark Therapeutics, which is the maker of Luxturna, which is Voretigene, is the generic, and this is the treatment that is now commercially available for patients with labor congenital amaurosis, or LCA, due to mutations in the RPE65 gene. Spark has paired with Invitae, which is a genetic testing company, in a campaign called ID, your IRD, IRD standing for inherited retinal disease, and they're offering free genetic testing for patients that are suspected to have inherited retinal diseases. And there are some things that I think are good about that, and there are also some issues that I take with the setup that they've got. Do you want to talk about both of them?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Which should we talk about first?
I'm fine with either one. We're going to cover everything, so whatever you want to do is fine with me.
Well, I'm glad that they are offering free genetic testing. I think that's to be commended. Genetic testing can be expensive. It's not always covered by insurance, and it's really important. Genetic testing gives us information on the prognosis for a disease. It helps us to provide genetic counseling that's appropriate for a patient. It can reduce the amount of expensive ancillary diagnostic testing that can be needed in the future, like electroretinograms, if we know the genetic mutation that a patient's got. And also, in the future, when we've got more and more of these treatments, like Luxturna, available, I believe that the vast majority of them, especially, for sure, the gene therapy ones, will depend on us knowing with a very high degree of certainty what genetic mutations a patient has. And so I tell my patients, you know, these are the benefits of genetic testing. It's never mandatory. It's always the patient's option. But one thing you definitely want to think about is in the future when we have more and more treatments available, we are going to need to know what mutation happened in your DNA. And so I'm glad that Invitae and Spark are offering a free option. It's also relatively easy to use. They can send out some kits that the patient can then provide either a blood sample or a saliva sample, and then they come with a nice little FedEx prepaid envelope that you can drop off and send in, and it gets overnighted to them. So those are the things that I like about it. But the main issue that I have with it, the quote here that is good to keep in mind is one from Albert Einstein. He said, "Everything should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler." All right. So just backing up a little bit, in the human genome, there are 3 billion base pairs of DNA. And 1% of those, or 30 million, are exomic, or coding DNA, DNA that gets made into protein that makes us who we are. The rest is all intronic stuff that is less important. And that's in about 20 to 25,000 different genes. And now, something that I didn't realize until I got into this field is that we're all mutants, right? Mm-hmm. So we could all go to Professor Xavier's school for the gifted. We all have hundreds on average of different mutations, hundreds of them, derivations from the consensus sequence that doesn't cause, these mutations don't cause any disease at all. It's not like, oh, they, you know, just have a minor effect, or they, you know, might just cause a mild subclinical disease. They don't cause any problems whatsoever in terms of disease. But the issue that they can present is that they can act as imposters when you're trying to find the patient's truly pathologic mutation. It's kind of like they're spraying ink in the water. And when you're looking for a mutation that's causing a person's disease, these non-disease-causing polymorphisms or benign mutations, whatever you want to call them, can fool you into thinking that you've got the right guy, so to speak, but mm-hmm. in fact you don't. And the more genes that you look at, the more likely you are to run into one of these red herrings, just by the nature of multiple measurements penalties. When people think of doing genetic testing, sometimes patients will be like, oh, so it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. And my mentor, Ed Stone, always used to like to say, it's not like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's like looking for a silver needle in a haystack full of platinum needles. It's not like you're sitting there looking at a conveyor belt of apples, and you got to find the one rotten apple amidst all the beautiful lineup of, you know, red, delicious apples. It's sort of like you're looking at this lineup of apples, and a lot of them are normal looking, but some of them are kind of weird and misshapen, and a bunch of them are rotten, and you got to find the one that's like going to taste the worst. It's hard. It's not simple. And the reason why this is so important is because of the multiple measurements penalty that I mentioned earlier. And as clinicians, we understand this, right? So we understand that if we order 100 tests for a patient, that on average, 5 of those, or 5%, are going to come back abnormal, not because they're truly causing the disease or they're the problem, but just by random chance. And that's because in statistics we set our alpha level at 0.05, and so, or at 5%, and so the p-value is 0.05, and that tells us that, hey, if we get an abnormal result, there's a 95% likelihood that it truly is abnormal and disease-causing and significant, whereas there's a 5% chance that it's not. And so the more tests that you run, the more likely you are to run into these results that are abnormal but meaningless. So it's sort of like if you're an ER doc and you're seeing a patient with a fever, you know, you might order like a CBC or something like that, but you would never order a CBC and a comprehensive chemistry and a tox screen and a pregnancy test. Yeah. And, yeah, ANA, lead level, thyroid. Right. Pulmonary function test, whole body MRI,
and then hold yourself to the standard that if there's a single abnormal result, you got to do something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't do all that even if you could do it for free, or even if you could do it all at the same time, and you wouldn't do it because you know that sure, like amidst all of that data that you're going to get, yeah, the true culprit, you know, is in there somewhere, but you also know that you're going to get a bunch of junk and a bunch of meaningless data and abnormal quote-unquote results that are pretty likely to ultimately mislead you in the proper care for your patient. We would never do that, and that makes sense to us. Now, so back to the methodology that is being used in this ID your IRD campaign. The way that they do it is it's a 248-gene panel. It can't be narrowed. It's one size fits all. If you have any kind of clinical characteristics of any inherited retinal disease, you know, visual field loss, central visual loss, photophobia, nyctalopia, abnormal fundus appearance, any of that, you can submit the testing and they'll run your DNA on the exact same panel of disease. And it has conditions with clinical characteristics that are really disparate, like everything from Best disease to Stargardt disease, Stickler syndrome to labor, congenital amaurosis, conditions that really any ophthalmologist should be able to distinguish just on clinical grounds and say, like, oh yeah, those things are different. And that's a problem for the reasons that we were just talking about. It's not one test. It's
right.
It's 248 different tests all wrapped up in a bow. And yeah, it's simpler and it's good to have things that are simple, but we don't want to make them simpler than they can be. It's simpler, but it's not better. It's kind of like an analogy I was thinking of when I was trying to get ready for our pod today. It would be like if, say, a person's walking down the street and they get mugged, right? And this woman, you know, she gets mugged. She's the victim, and it happens really fast. The guy gets away, and the police are talking to her, and she says, like, boy, officer, it happened so fast. I didn't get a great look at him, but it was definitely a man, and he was really tall. He was like 6'4", at least. And so a few weeks go by, they bring her down to the station, and there's a police lineup. Now, what sort of person do we, like, expect to see in that lineup, right? So it's going to be a bunch of tall men because we've already narrowed our hypothesis by what we know. This 248-gene panel business, and really any large-scale panel like it, is sort of like if we brought our victim down to the station and sat her down and then trotted out a lineup with, like, you know, a bunch of 5'4" guys in there, maybe some women, you know, maybe a couple of taller guys as well. And if we did that, the victim would be like, hey, so what's going on here? You know, like, a lot of these people look nothing like what I told you the guy looked like. And it would be confusing, and it'd be harder for her to pick out the, you know, the real culprit out of this huge lineup. And it's really the same thing. We don't need to confuse the issue, and really, I think that testing on that large of a spectrum is fraught with potential for error.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I just think that it always goes back to there's two core principles. You brought up the major one, which is the more tests you get, the more information you have, and more information is not always good because it's going to be messy information. Mm. You know, it's garbage in, garbage out sometimes. But the other thing is you always have to think about pre-test, post-test probability for any test. Like,
yeah.
And like the academy, you referenced the academy. What do you do with the test result? If the test result doesn't change anything, then why are you getting that test? And genetic testing is a little different because we're on the frontier and things are changing and new therapies are developing. So it may be helpful to have some of this information, even if you can't do anything right now. But I still think that principle holds, like you're saying, if you're trying to get batteries of tests and tests and tests. And like 23andMe it's like the same thing, right? You're testing for things that the person who got the test was not interested in. Mm-hmm. And now you're creating noise. So it's really fascinating. You know, this is only going to get more complicated, right? I mean, it's not getting simpler. It's just
Definitely.
Getting more complicated. What else is hot? What else is new on the inherited retinal disease front? Anything else we want to talk about?
Well, just kind of putting a bow on this discussion here, I do think there's a role for this ID or IRD-based testing with Spark and Invitae. I think that as a rule, any patient that is suspected of having an inherited retinal disease, retinal dystrophy, should be referred to a specialist. And there's a lot of us scattered throughout the country. And at those visits, we will make our clinical diagnosis, for example, Best disease or autosomal recessive retinitis pigmentosa or something like that, Stargardt disease versus pattern dystrophy. And we'll make that as narrow as we can, and we'll use that hypothesis to order a focused genetic test of those candidate genes, those usual suspects, so to speak. And in doing that, we'll make any abnormal result that we get back much more likely to be that pathologic than if we had cast a much wider net. Now, if the patient is both interested in having genetic testing and wholly unable to travel to see an inherited eye disease specialist, then the local ophthalmologist could consider ordering testing via the ID or IRD program with the caveats that we've gone over before. So that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, if only the Celtics had taken your recommendations about Kyrie Irving last year. I would have to curse. What a mess. There's a word that rhymes with bitch show that describes the Celtics and what happened.
Yeah, it was bad. And really, we should, if we had the abilities, we should really cue up the audio from a couple of years ago when the Celtics acquired Kyrie.
I was a voice crying
in the wilderness, Jay, saying I have concerns about his effects on the chemistry of this team. I mean, obviously, they would do the trade again because it was kind of sad, but Isaiah was, he was not in good health. And I loved what he did for the team and for the city, but they brought in Kyrie. Kyrie was better, but from a team chemistry standpoint, he was obviously much worse. I'm glad he's gone. I look forward to seeing what they can do this season. I wouldn't be surprised if they won more games than last season in the regular season. And I'm excited as a Celtics fan and also as an NBA fan for the upcoming season.
Well, I mean, so much has happened since the last time we talked on air. We've talked a lot off air. I mean, we could talk about the playoffs, the finals, and then free agency just completely dwarfed that. It's too complicated to go through all of it. But here's more interesting. So let's just do over unders, right? So I'm going to give you some over unders, and we're going to use, there's different places, but let's use Westgate, So okay.
For regular season win total?
Regular season over-unders. And then we can talk about the teams that we go through. So I'm going to give you, we're going to go through maybe the top 10, The Bucks, 58.5. Over or under?
I would go over.
I would too.
I think
Giannis is going to be good.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they have something to prove after last year. I think if they can tie Eric Bledsoe to a chair and not let him get off the bench, that might help.
People don't realize they were close to winning the title last year. I know they lost in six, but they were up 2-0, and game three went to triple overtime or something.
Yeah, it was either double or triple. That was a series that could have gone either way. And I like them for over 58.5. You said?
Yeah, I agree. Philly stole Al Horford from your beloved Celtics. 55. Mm.
I would also go over there. I think those are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. I've never been a big Jimmy Butler fan. I hope you have a great experience with him in Miami.
Oh, God.
I wish you a lot of luck with that.
Josh Richardson's really good.
I think Philly's good. I think they'll win. I would definitely think upper 50s for them, barring injury to Embiid.
Well, the question is whether they should play him that many minutes games. Maybe they sit him. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we're in that era now of, mandatory rest and whatnot. Maybe they would, but I'd be shocked if they won, 51 games or something in the regular season. I don't see that happening, so I would take over there.
Do you think J.J. Redick's gotten a little overrated over time?
No, I'd say properly rated for JJ. I think he's horrible on defense. The Celtics would hunt him out mercilessly in the playoffs when they played him. But on offense, he has valuable skills as a knockdown shooter. He's now sort of being branded as the chemistry guy and stuff like that, and we'll see what he can do down in New Orleans. But I thought he was properly rated. He's had a good career. I mean, he came out the same year as Spokane's own Adam Morrison, who's obviously much inferior career in terms of NBA, although I think he might have gotten a ring somewhere along the way.
The Lakers. He won a title with the Lakers at some point.
Yeah, I think he did. I think it was
The reason I asked that, because people asked that, like, they're not going to be good or as good as people think because they don't have J.D. Redick. I think if Josh Richardson's your fifth best player, you're really good. I mean, he was the best player on the Heat last year. They didn't make the playoffs, but they were a 40-win team. He was the best player. He's now the fifth best player on this team. I don't know. I think the Sixers, like you said, these are the two teams to beat. And I'm not surprised they're number one and number two in win totals, because the West we'll get to is kind of unpredictable.
I don't think Redick for Richardson is something that's like making me move the needle and take the under there. I agree.
Clippers and Jazz are both at 54.5, and the Rockets are also at 54.5. Three very interesting offseason teams.
I would take Clippers over the Jazz. I would take a slight over, and Houston I would go under.
Interesting.
I don't believe.
You don't believe. You know, I the only thing I'll say, I've never been a Harden fan. I like Russell Westbrook a lot, but I never loved his game or his advanced stats like most people. I think Harden is great advanced stats, but I hate watching him, so it's interesting to see them on the same team, because it's like...
Almost everyone hates watching him.
Oh, my God. And I'm a Rockets fan, too, and it's just painful. I actually think they will be better in the regular season than people will think. I think they're going to flame out in the postseason. I think if you can game plan for them for seven games, you can absolutely shut them down. And you're just going to make Westbrook into a jump shooter. But I think if you have to play them and he's motivated, you know, like if you have to play them once and you haven't seen them in a while and they're bombing threes, like assuming they're healthy, I think they win a lot of games. I don't know.
I mean, do you remember how slow they came out of the gate last year?
Yeah.
I mean,
they still
won
a
like,
lot of games.
Are we even going to make the playoffs? And I just, I think it's much more likely that come January 15th, you know, kind of in the doldrums of the season, or February, we're reading stories about like locker room sniping. Is D'Antoni the right guy? Has he ever done it? Can these guys play together? Westbrook still can't shoot. Harden seems disinterested. Like, that's what I think is more likely, and so I would go under on that one.
You know, I think the interesting thing, again, we always talk about what ifs, and we've so far removed from this because it feels like forever ago. They really could have beaten Golden State in that series. You know, it was 2-2.
You're talking about this year?
Yeah, I mean last year for sure. This year was close too. Game 6 at home, they were up in the fourth quarter. I remember they were up 6 or 7 every time. That was one of those games the Warriors felt like they were going to get blown out like 6 different times. Hung around and hit enough shots to win the game. I mean, that's like a classic Golden State win, right? That's what like really great playoff teams do, and really not so great playoff teams like Rick Adelman coached teams and Mike D'Antoni coached teams, they blow those games. Like they had like, as Zach Lowe talked about in this podcast, they had like a 3-on-1 at some point in the fourth quarter, up 7 with Curry on the bench. And I think they somehow ended up with a contested Gerald Green 3 from a 3-on-1 fast break. You know, like,
suboptimal.
It's like the classic Mike D'Antoni failure in the playoff. I don't know. I feel bad because he was my neighbor in Philadelphia and I didn't realize it for 2 years. But
Mike D was?
Yeah, so I was in Philly one day. I was coming down the elevator in my apartment building. This guy walks in with his family. And I did kind of do the double take when you don't quite place.
That's somebody.
Yeah, you know, like, I know who this is. And he kind of gave the look like, oh, God, it's happening again. Like, because he's a really tall dude. And he looks bit like the Pringles logo. And
yeah,
I'm like, and then finally I realized it. And then I realized he was some consultant or assistant for the Sixers then. This was like... right before he took the Rockets job.
After the Knicks.
Yeah.
So and after the Lakers,
I felt bad about it, because it took me 2 minutes after he left the elevator for me to think about who he was. just quickly, you know, the Clippers, I think it's boring. I think they hit the over if people play. I think they're deep. They're a good regular season team. I think they should hit the over. You know, even if Kawhi doesn't play every game, they're really good. The Jazz, I think they're a great regular season team. They have been historically. That's your hometown team, if it's not your favorite team. I really like Mike Conley, and I think Bojan Bogdanovic is really good. I just think when you get to the playoffs, if your best player is one of those two guys or Donovan Mitchell, unless he makes a leap, they're a second round and out team. I mean, I don't see it. Like, they need somebody beyond that. This is not a sum greater than the parts kind of year. There are too many other stars on other teams.
Yeah, Mitchell needs to make a leap for them to make a deep run, for sure. I agree with you.
I mean, it's like the 2004 Pistons. Like, you can win in a year if everything kind of lines up for you, and Kobe Bryant's flying back and forth to Colorado, and he hates, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
remembered fact about Kobe there, I would say.
Oh, God. Somehow it's become completely water under the bridge, and it's unbelievable. Anyway, not going to trash Kobe Bryant more than I have to. I hate Kobe Bryant, but...
What about the Lakers over under?
So the Nuggets and Lakers are next, 52.5 and 50.5. I think the Nuggets is fair. I think they're an over or a kind of they're gonna hit it. And I'm curious if they can get the Wizards just failed in trying to re-sign Bradley Beal to a monster extension. Yeah. If they could get Bradley Beal, that team is good. That team is like they should win the title. Good. Jokic is really, really good.
Yeah, he's awesome. Fun to watch.
Lakers,
on the Lakers,
what do you think?
This is my favorite one. Lock it in.
Right?
This is the lock of the year. Under, hard under. I can't wait for a year from now when we're reviewing this and they'll say, oh, you know, Weed and Jay, they were on it. Under, hard under.
I think they're a 45 win team.
Yeah. I mean, okay, first of all, they got two guys and then a bunch of frou-frou. The rest of the roster, who knows? I mean, I could probably suit up for them. LeBron is like, I think Zach Lowe said that during this year he will become either second or third all-time in minutes played of any NBA player ever, okay? So at some point, and we saw it last season, he's going to have an injury. He's going to be out for a stretch of time. He's going to be on mandatory rest, taking a break, load management, as they say, Jay, load management. Anthony Davis, you know, doesn't have a great track record of staying healthy. I think this is a team that isn't going to be super motivated to win a ton of the games in the regular season. Those two guys are veterans, and they're going to be saying, let's make the playoffs, and then we'll see. I would take the under.
Can you name? So I feel bad because I had to look up their roster because I forgot who else is on this roster. So yeah. I'm going to name the other key members of their rotation. There's Kyle
Kuzma. Yeah.
Danny Green. Jared Dudley, who's 34 years old.
Yeah,
DeMarcus Journeyman. Cousins, coming off of torn patella and a torn Achilles. Quinn Cook, who was terrible in the finals, was totally exposed in the finals as a guy who should not be on your crunch time lineup in the playoffs.
Really, DeMarcus Cousins, we shouldn't even call him that anymore because he's not the same guy. I was hoping it would be better for him. Coming off a second serious injury, you know, the quadriceps thing. And
low likelihood.
Not really a big factor there, I would say.
Other key members, Rajon Rondo is back. Mm-hmm. Lance Stevenson is back. JaVale McGee is back. Troy Daniels.
Oh, my gosh. And what, Michael Beasley not available?
Alex Caruso. KCP is back for $12 million.
Yeah, keep getting
clutch,
them checks.
Clutch, man. Clutch sports. And then Kostas Antetokounmpo is on this team. And Avery Bradley.
The lesser
on this team.
Antetokounmpo. Avery Bradley was awesome for the Celtics a few years ago.
Only 28 years old, but I don't know how he's washed, but he's washed.
Yeah, I think he's taken a steep decline. I can't wait to watch this team implode. I just, as a Celtics fan.
Well, Celtics are right behind them, 49.5.
Okay, so that feels about right.
I
can see them going.
They're going to win 50.
Yeah, and I think last year that's right where they were at. It was like 49, something like that.
They're
going to
have good. They're going to have their better chemistry, less talented version of last year.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be a good kind of chemistry experiment.
Kemba's good. Kemba's a good guy.
I think so too.
You want Kemba on your team.
Yeah, he seems like a good dude. He's already endeared himself to the locals, kind of hanging out.
Tatum's been killing it in FIBA.
Streets in there. Yeah, they've got a bunch of their team, him, Smart, and Jalen, and Kemba on the World Cup team.
I just think this is the year. I think last year was the Brad Stevens, like, we're all going to say, oh, actually, he's not that good. How could he not win more games with this team? This is going to be the Brad Stevens is actually, again, a good coach here. Like,
yeah.
People are going to be like, actually, he can be a good coach if he has a player who's running his point who listens to him.
Yeah. I think Kyrie is a head case. I look forward to watching Brooklyn implode.
Well, I'm not.
Over the
we're
next
not going to
years as
Brooklyn
well.
Is way down there. Brooklyn is
well for sure because KD's out. But
yeah,
even next year when he comes back, I'm not optimistic. But
so
we'll see.
We're going to end with my most interesting one: the Warriors 49.5. Just gave Draymond Green a monster extension. They have basically said we are going all in this core. Klay Thompson projected to come back in March for him. Maybe even January.
I think under.
I think they go under, but I think this is a scary-ass playoff team if you have to play them.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
you do
totally.
Not want to play them.
Klay Thompson is my favorite player in the whole league.
Oh, man. That was the saddest moment of the season. He is a baller.
It was really sad. And the thing with him is, you know, he's going to come back as soon as he possibly can. And that doesn't mean he's going to be in top form. And March is late. I mean, season ends mid-April. So I think that this team might go slight under mid to high 40s. But then, yeah, in the playoffs, if he's back and Steph's back, there's going to be a lot of the so-called nobody believes in us theory with this team. They're going to be strongly motivated to prove the haters and the doubters wrong, and they could do damage in the playoffs for sure.
See,
I don't see them beating anybody.
I don't think the Lakers could get a high enough seed, but my dream scenario when the free agency unrolled was the Lakers being like a 2 seed and getting the Warriors in the first round just getting crushed. Like
appointment viewing. That would be so good.
But it's not gonna happen.
I hope it happens. It could happen. I mean, the West is competitive and could just be a couple of games difference between top and bottom seeds.
Yeah, well, I'll leave it there. There's too many. These are all super interesting. You could go way down the list. Super interesting. So let's just follow finish with this. Besides the Celtics, besides the team we talked about, who's a team we didn't mention? You're like, I'm really excited to see that team play this year.
Let's see. New Orleans.
Pelicans?
I am.
Zion.
I am secretly toying with the idea of if I were a betting man, making a wager on New Orleans to win more regular season games than the Lakers.
You could get really good odds on that, my friend.
Right.
They are at 39 over under. That's a big claim.
I know. I'm a believer. I think they've got a lot of talent on the team. I think those guys are going to be eager to prove what they can do after Anthony Davis basically said they weren't good enough. I think Zion is awesome. There's going to be a ton of fun to watch. Put it this way, if the kids are in bed on a Friday night and I turn on ESPN and it's like New Orleans against Indiana, I'm not changing the channel.
Yeah. That's much watch TV.
See what they look like. So.
Well, again, that was my other dream scenario. It was Lakers Pelicans 1-8 in the first round.
Mm.
And Drew Holiday just like ravaging because the Lakers don't have any guards, right? They have zero guards, he would just destroy them on both sides of the floor, and Zion would go crazy. And anyway,
it would be glorious.
It's gonna be a crazy season. It's gonna be very interesting to see what happens. We didn't talk about my Heat. I don't want to talk about the Heat. They're gonna be like a 7 seed, and it's not gonna be good, but.
Hey, good news for you. Woj announced today that the doubleheaders are going to start earlier this year, so you East Coasters don't have to stay up until like 1.
That's a smart
move. They're starting. It's only a half hour. They're starting a half hour earlier.
So it's going to be 7:30 and 9:30 or 10 instead of 8 and 10:30.
I think that's right. Yeah, it's a half an hour earlier from what it was in the past, and that's the beauty of living on the Pacific Coast, man. Is you know you get the first game in kind of around dinner time, kids go to bed, and then you have a whole other game to look forward to, and you go to sleep at a reasonable hour, you get up in the morning.
West Coast, my friend. Thanks so much for joining from the West Coast, and hopefully we'll have you back soon. We got to do it sooner.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jay. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, bro. Take care.
Yep. You too. Bye.
Remember, this episode and all prior episodes are on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 189 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. You'll also find our blog, Equal Round Reactive Lessons from Our Pupils. Remember, you can claim CME credits for select podcast episodes via the AAO website. Simply log in as an AAO member and visit the link in the episode description. On the website, you can sign up for a mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes,
At the bottom are links to subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store as well as the Android Store. You can like our Facebook page or find us in the Apple Podcast Store and Android Store. We are on Twitter at Retina Podcast, and to contact us, click on the contact us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We love getting feedback on things we can do better, things we are already doing well. We appreciate anyone who subscribes via iTunes or Google Play to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to Dr. Weed for joining me today. Thanks to Dr. Louis Kai, Dr. Angela Chang, and Dr. Michael Benicasa for preparing this episode. Listeners, thank you for what you do on a daily basis, the articles you read and publish, the patient care you provide every day, and the conversations you inspire here each week. This is Jay Schreeder, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.
Take care. Bye-bye.